The Waters of Love, written by Barbara Cartland, narrated by Anthony Wren. Chapter 1, 1898. It was a high fence, but the horse took it easily, landing lightly on the other side and causing the rider to break into a smile. "Well done, old fellow," he said, patting the animal's great neck. Man and horse were pleasant to behold, both handsome, both in the prime of their youth and vigour. Francis, Marquis of Wimbledon, took a ride every morning at this time, enjoying the beauties of his vast estate, which was considerable, as it was one of the largest in Berkshire. He owned farms, houses for rent, and even a village. From here, the view was glorious, a vista of trees and lawns, with the glint of water in the distance. Far off, he could see cottages, their thatched roofs looking cosy and welcoming. But in his heart, he knew that the cheerful appearance was a sham. His estate was in a state of decay, because the rents he received were not enough to keep it in good condition. The thatched roofs that looked so fine at a distance were mostly in need of repair. His own house, too, required a good deal of work, but he was too much in debt even to think about it. Suddenly, the brightness of the morning seemed to have darkened. His exhilarated mood of a moment earlier vanished, and he began to canter home. At 28, good-looking, charming, and titled, Francis, Marquis of Wimbledon, seemed blessed with life's bounties. But his existence had become an unremitting fight to raise money, to keep his estate in good order, and he was losing the battle. Having come into his inheritance when he was only 18, he had found it extremely difficult to run, and somehow his obligations always outran his income. Every day it seemed to him he was inundated by requests from people on his estate to help restore their houses, their farms, or their stables. Because he had no wish to admit he was a failure, he had somehow to find the money, even if it was only a little of what they asked of him. But it simply put him deeper in debt, and the debt was growing like a cloud, spoiling the horizon. He left his horse in the stables and entered the house to be met by his butler with the words, "Mr. Johnson's here to see you, my lord." The Marquis was silent for a moment before he said, "Show him into the smoking room, and tell him I will be with him in a few minutes." "Very good, my lord." When the butler had departed, the Marquis groaned to himself. He guessed why his accountant had come to see him, and it certainly would not be good news. Mr. Johnson was a middle-aged man who had looked after him ever since he inherited the estate. He was waiting for him as he entered the smoking room. "Good morning, Johnson," the Marquis greeted him. "I was not expecting you, and I hope this surprise visit is not going to be a gloomy one." He held out his hand as he spoke, and Mr. Johnson shook it before he replied, "I am afraid, as usual, my lord, I do not bring good news." "I thought that was too much to ask of you," the Marquis answered with a smile. He sat down hard in the chair he always occupied. The accountant, whose office was in London, and who had therefore made a special journey, sat opposite him and regarded the Marquis with sympathy. He had come so young to his responsibilities, and Mr. Johnson had thought he would have preferred to stay in London. Or perhaps he should be abroad enjoying himself with pretty and attractive women, rather than being alone in this huge house and having little to amuse him except the horses and the estate.